Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 174 of Nerd Pride Radio. 174, the IQ of Simon Ambrose, who was the 2007 winner of the third series of the British version of the reality TV show The Apprentice, apparently. Thank you, Ronster. Alternately, 174 is the average beats per minute in drum and bass music, a quality that stems from the driving breakbeat drum lines. I'm just quoting what Talvin sent to me on this one. The consistency of the beats per minute is often maintained to service both live performances and DJ mixes. There you go. All right, at least I didn't have to do any grueling research, right? Thank you, guys. I appreciate you sending those in for me. Oh, way better than my last few. All right, so ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I'm actually pretty awesome right now. Turns out I was having a really crappy morning. This is a day off. It's President's Day, so being a government employee, I have my day off, and we had a long weekend. I was super tired. I slept in, and then you just get one of those days, you sleep in a little bit, and then your mind is just foggy, and I couldn't get it together, and I was all grumpy, and I got into an argument with Aiden that was all my fault because I was just being grumpy about stuff. And so I was going to sit down and record, and I thought, you know what, I need to loosen up. So Aiden and I just went out and got the tire fixed on his car. We got some McDonald's. Feeling better now. So I am awesome. All right, my name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd. Where's my stuff? Oh, a history nerd. There it is. A sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, a computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week, it's Aiden again. He's back. All right, Aiden, apparently, I talked to Kyle, and he said you're not banned from the program. What he said was that you need to either get on the mic or shut the hell up. So now you can be back. Are we ready? Are we? Thanks, Kyle. Now he's not talking to me. No, wait. No, I mean, thanks, Kyle. Now he's not talking to me. All right. We can take this either way. So anyway, we'll see if he joins us. He's playing Skyrim right now. Let's see. I've got... Oh, that's right. It's time for yet another installment in our all-too-frequent segment. Mike was wicked wrong! All right. I ran into Emily the other day at the grocery store. Emily, who is Aiden's friend, and I told a story about them several episodes back. And apparently she's back for the weekend, and yet for some reason working. And so we chit-chatted, and she finished the conversation. Hold on. Got some static going here. I don't know whose fault it is. There it is. All right. I don't know what happened. Something's wrong with these cords. Anyway, we get done talking, and before I leave, she finishes with, oh, by the way, I'm 19. So I didn't go back and listen to that episode. I can only presume that since Aiden was 18 at the time I told that message or told that story, I presume that I said in the story that she was 18 as well, and apparently I was wrong. So anyway, Emily's 19. For those of you who are sweating that out and worrying, we are setting it straight now. And I was just explaining this, how I was going to do this intro, and I was just explaining it to Aiden, and he said, well, Dad, I'm 19 as well. And I'm like, oh, wait, Holy crap, did I tell that story wrong? Did I get my son's... Oh, wait, no, that's right. He just turned... never mind. Forget it. I got it. No, he was 18 when I told the story. So anyway, none of that matters. We're moving on. Also, before we get started, updates! Hey, who wants to hear another cute story about my cat? Yeah, that's right. You do. God, I love my cat. Bear is awesome. The other day, so I go to put some t-shirts away. So I open up the drawer, and I'm putting my t-shirts away in the drawer. And the minute that drawer opens, Bear, sitting on the bed, just all of a sudden, full alert mode, staring at that drawer. Apparently, he had no idea that there were drawers in that. He just thought it was a big block of obstruction. And so he waits until I get all my stuff done. He thinks I've left, and then he immediately goes and starts pawing at that drawer trying to get it open. Nope, that's not working. So he crawls underneath, and there's a couple of old computers that don't work anymore are stacked underneath. He starts pawing those to move them out of the way so he can get his paw underneath the dresser. Starts batting at the underside of it. No, can't get in that way. So he crawls around to the back, pushes in, gets his head under there, tap. No, can't get in. God, he knows for sure that there's an inside to this thing now. It's driving him crazy that he can't get to it. But man, it's fun to watch him puzzle that crap out. So there you go. That's my very short, very cute, well, in my opinion, cute cat story. Bear's awesome. All right. I got one more. I got, here, I need a sound effect for this one. That's right. I got a little feedback this week. This actually, came from, well, I suppose I shouldn't name the listener, this person, did contact me by phone and let me know that he or she really, really enjoys the podcast, and looks forward to it every single week. And it's such a joy to hear my voice. But also thought that maybe I should talk a little bit more about my parents sometimes and maybe how important they are to my life and how influential they were on me, obviously, as they raised me and how really, all credit should go to my parents, my wonderful, loving, sweet, very attractive parents, who made me the man I am today. Without them, there would be no Nerd Pride Radio, said this anonymous caller. So I'm passing that message along to you guys. I think that is absolutely true and right. This caller was spot on. So my parents are the best. I love them. You guys are great. All right. Anyway, there. Now we're done. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the very best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list. Nope, not that one. Here it is.
And now for something completely different.
That's right. It's something completely different. This is just stuff I don't have a category for yet. Okay. This one is, from a podcast I listen to called Couple Skate featuring Emma Arnold. I think if you want to actually listen to the podcast, you have to search for Emma Arnold's name. And she's a stand-up comic and writer and et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, she described this thing that one of her friends does, called the high-low handshake. And Kyle, my brother Kyle, this is entirely for you. I am giving you this because I think you would be particularly good at it and you would really enjoy doing it. All right? It's called the high-low handshake. She has a friend of hers, and I can't remember the guy's name. We'll just call him Steve Brown because it's a name. All right. And her friend Steve, he does the high-low handshake. This is where he comes up and he starts complimenting you. Right, and usually in a social situation, party situation, but you can do it anywhere. And he starts complimenting you. And then in the middle of the compliment, he starts to turn it a little bit south. All right. And you start to realize that, wait a minute, this is really kind of offensive. All right. He's being really shitty. And then just as that starts to dawn on you, he then breaks in with, whoa, what am I saying? And he'll jam his hand up to you, going in for a handshake, and jams it, like puts his hand up really high for this handshake, like going in about chest level, like middle of your chest, just jams that hand right in there. And so therefore you're forced to grab his hand and shake it just by instinct. All right. So here he's like, whoa, what am I saying? Gets that hand up there for Steve Brown. Whoa, I am a huge fan. I am your biggest fan. No, seriously, we're all good here. We're good. You're great. All right. So he is now taken a compliment, turned it into an insult, and then suddenly backs off on it, and now you're stuck basking in his insult while being forced to shake his hand at the same time. And I thought, Kyle, since you're a big fan of Flexo, all right, because this is essentially Flexo's modus operandi, minus the handshake, is he comes in with something mean and terrible, and then, oh, no, I'm just joshing. You guys are all right. All right. So he'll come in, and the one example that she gives is, you know, he comes in, and he's like, wow, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. I hear you're doing really good. I mean, obviously, I'd have to hear because I can't see because, you know, I haven't seen any, you know, TV spots or, you know, it's not like you're getting any of the talk shows or anything. It's almost like your agent doesn't even have time to, but whoa, what am I saying? Whoa, Steve Brown, whoa, biggest fan. I love your work. You're awesome. All right. And so, you know, just as you're realizing it's an insult, all of a sudden he's in there with the handshake and playing all buddy with you. And so I thought, Kyle, that is something that you could learn to do and probably really enjoy. So there, I give that to you. In fact, she said he's so good at it that she will try to, because she's mastered it for herself, that she'll come in with the compliment turned insult. And then her version of it is, you know, she'll introduce herself and it'll be, you know, she'll put her hand up there and say, whoa, what am I saying? Emma Arnold. Oh, come on. We're all right, right? We're all good. All right. We're good. Okay. So, that's her version of it. But she says she tried it on him, you know, because she can get other people with it. She tried it on him, and she goes in, and whatever it was, oh, it was something about not having money, something like that. And he's like, whoa. I get what you're doing. That was all right. But I mean, seriously, Emma, it's not meant to be hurtful. And just as she's feeling really bad, as she starts to apologize, he then goes, oh, whoa, what am I saying? Steve Brown, whoa, I'm a biggest fan. We're good. Okay. So turned it right back around on her. I thought it was really funny. Anyway, if I didn't tell that story well and it wasn't entertaining, then go listen to Couple Skate with Emma Arnold and her friend whose name I can't recall. I've only listened to like 3 episodes. Go listen to them because she told it really well and they're very entertaining. But Kyle, again, gift to you. So, all right, next up on my master list, let's see. Oh, my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. All right, look, the only recent game I've played, only new game that I've played, we were just at game night the other night, which, by the way, huge success. We had almost 60 people there for game night, which means we were out of space. We pulled out every table we had. Everything was full. Everything was bustling. And it's like 20 more people than we've ever had, you know, our previous maximum. So it was a really good turnout. Lots of new people. And it just went over well. I think everyone had a great time. I think we're gonna see a lot of those people come back. It was awesome. But, the stuff we played, I mean, we played some Secret Hitler, we played some more Cobras. I still can't wait for my Cobra set to come in. And had an awesome time. The only new game I played there was Star Wars Clue. I've never played any version of Clue other than regular Clue. And, this was a little on the odd side. I don't know how enamored I am of it because it's not, it's not as, the items you're looking for don't quite make sense. So, I mean, you know, it's obvious when you're investigating a murder, it's, hey, you know, Mrs. White did it in the study with a candlestick. Done. All right. It is who committed the murder, where and with what. It's all unified as opposed to Star Wars Clue, where you're trying to figure out where the plans are hidden for the Death Star, what is going to be the Empire's next target planet to destroy, and what vehicle are we going to use to make our escape from here when we get out. I'm not really thrilled with any of that. It doesn't unify quite as well as it should. Plus, this board, it's a two-level board, and it's circular, and it's arranged so that if you're sitting around a table, you can't all see the board at the same time, so you have to keep turning the thing around to figure out where you're going to go. And there's cards, extra cards involved. Like, if you're trapped in the hallway, if you end your turn and you're not in a room somewhere, then you have to draw a hallway card, which means, you know, maybe the hallway's clear and you can just go wherever you want. Or maybe there's stormtroopers chasing you and you have to roll more dice. Maybe you've been caught. You have to go to the brig. You wind up in the trash compactor. You wind up, you know, it's just odd. It didn't feel like normal Clue. I mean, it was still the puzzle solving and it was still, I really, really enjoyed that part, but man, I thought all the extra stuff they added in was just extra stuff. So, all right, sirens going by. Wow. Hope everybody's okay. All right. And the other game that I want to play and I haven't yet, that'll be coming up, is my friend Kaz has designed a new game about aliens kidnapping cows. And the name of the game, is it Mars Need Cows? Is it Cownappers? Is it Cows versus Aliens? Is it, I'm not sure what the final name is, but either way, it doesn't matter. He's sending me the cards, which are probably, I probably have a set of them in my mailbox right now if I just went and looked. Because he's sending me a set of the cards and he's got all the rules done up and it's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to this. I love when my friends design games. I love playing stuff written by somebody I know. That's something about that just makes it extra cool. So anyway, I'll report back on how that goes once I finally get a game done. So I'm excited. Do I have anything else for the gaming table? Not really. Megan, there's been some gaming. We did some gaming with Scouts. We did some gaming here at home. We did some gaming at game night, but we're always playing games. Oh, I suppose this week I am going to be doing some Pathfinder again, and I've got Paranoia going, which is really turning out well. But man, I shouldn't say too much. So anyway, doesn't matter. I play a lot of games. I enjoy them. We're done with the gaming table. Next up, uncomfortable topics. Yeah, I think we're gonna do a lot of uncomfortable topics for as long as Trump is president, I think, because, man, this is rough. Look, it's a full-on attack on truth, okay? It is the attack on the First Amendment, which I did a big, long post about on Facebook a while back, a couple weeks ago, is Trump has officially declared the free press to be the enemy of the people. Did that come from his mouth, or was that just one of his spokespeople? I don't remember. But it doesn't matter. The Trump administration, they've already said that the press is the enemy. Well, now the free press is the enemy not just of his administration. No, they clarify. It's not an enemy of Trump, an enemy of his administration. No, the free press is the enemy of the people. That is scary. That is frightening. They are, one of his toadies is declaring that, hey, the press needs to take this seriously because they're really going to be holding them accountable. There are consequences for your actions, he says. And thus, we need to be worried that the exactly what I said before, he's ramping up to start taking action against people who say things in the press he doesn't like. He is ready to start taking action against people who criticize his presidency, people who don't pay him the respect he thinks he deserves, people who don't report the truth in the way that he thinks it needs to be reported. And that is, this is frightening. The free press is, it's the fourth estate. It is one of the pillars of this country. Our freedom of speech is, you guys know all this. You know all this. You know how important freedom of speech is. And he is saying all of the things that dictators say before they take away your freedom of speech. I don't care whether you supported him or voted for him. That's fine. Look, if you voted for Trump, if you supported Trump, great. Then you work on him to pass the legislation, well, to encourage the legislation, take the actions that you put him in office to do. Is one of the things that you put him in office to do, one of the things that you voted for, was did you vote for him so that he would silence the free press? Is that what you voted for him for? Then stop him. Speak out with everybody else. And right now, look, silencing the free press is a difficult thing because, you're going to shut down all of social media? I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm not saying there aren't countries, huge countries, very populous Chinese countries who have the ability to crack down on social media, crack down on the internet, to regulate what its people can and can't hear and say. It can be done, not easy, but they can get there. So let's head this off, and just before we even have to put it to a test, let's just let them know it's unacceptable. I mean, and I think people are saying that. I know people are saying that, but good God, this is dangerous. And he's not going to listen. Well, he's never going to listen. But things aren't going to change until people in his own party start standing up to him on the parts of his administration that they don't approve of. I have this feeling right now that, I mean, there's people like John McCain who are speaking out against him. There are some Republicans who are speaking out against him, and yet they're still voting for his actions. They're still backing him with their votes. So what good is speaking out at this point if you're still going to do everything he wants to do? I don't get this. He needs to piss off enough Republicans that they start turning on him. And he's getting there. I mean, he's already angered the press. He's already angered the intelligence agencies. He's already angered. There's all sorts of people upset with him. People who may or may not have been good conservatives who are now upset with him over stuff, but it's not enough yet. It's got to get there. Okay. This is connected to this topic, since we're already talking about Trump, but, I don't know. It almost should have been its own topic, but yeah, let's just go ahead and work it in right here. We were having some discussion this week about how does he believe this? How does he lie right to somebody's face and think that that's acceptable and think that he's going to get away with it? Is he that misinformed about the world? Is he so misled that, and here's my take on it. I think Trump has just grown up his entire life. He has spent the entire first 70 years of his life doing and saying whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and people back him up on it. He is supported in every single thing he does, his entire life, because he surrounds himself with people who will support whatever stupid thing he says. All right. If he wants to go off and tell half truths about some business dealing in order to persuade people to act a certain way, then he can go ahead and tell those half-truths. He can go ahead and make up lies about stuff if he wants. And he has surrounded himself with people who, because he's a billionaire and because they all want in on part of this fame and this money and this success, they will support him in whatever he says. They'll do whatever he says. And as a billionaire businessman, you can live in that bubble. You can get away with that. And nobody contradicts him. And the times that he is contradicted about something, the time that somebody dares to disrespect him, like Rosie O'Donnell, for example, he will never forget. That is so offensive to him, he will never forget, because it doesn't happen very often. Not a whole lot of criticism gets through to him through his entire life because of how he lives his life, because he is a spoiled billionaire used to getting his way on everything. So when some bit of criticism does get through to him, he will hold on to it forever. That he will take that offense with him to the grave. He will find a way 10 years after the fact to make an aside during a presidential debate to talk about what a loser Rosie O'Donnell is. During a presidential debate in a context that has absolutely no relationship to Rosie or to her comments on him or to his, there's no connection whatsoever, but he had to find a way to work it in. During a presidential debate, that's what kind of qualified leader he is that he has to take his presidential debate time to bring up a 10-year-old grudge with a talk show host. That's how petty the man is, all right? So his whole life he's been like this, even while he was running for president. Do you remember how the press treated him mostly as a joke throughout the entire process? Do you remember how we didn't really take him seriously and they didn't vet his statements nearly as hard as they did anybody else who was in this race on both sides? Do you remember that? They didn't, because there was no time. There was no time to be vetting him and confronting him, because he was a new, outrageous news story every single day, and they didn't take it seriously. And even when there was criticism, and there was a lot of criticism during this campaign, there was a lot out there. But let's also remember that we've got lots of news outlets that were perfectly happy to report news that he was happy with, okay? And I'm not just talking about Fox News, but Breitbart and lots of internet sources. And then there were lots of places that were reporting things that would make him happy, all right? That would report his view of the world. And it was kind of self-fulfilling, self-confirming. This was John Oliver just said this on his recent episode of Last Week Tonight, now that he's back from hiatus. And the idea that Trump sees something somewhere, all right, and in his mind he makes it truth. He decides that that is true, that that is something that is vital. And he says it, and because he's president, or because at that time he was candidate for president, it gets picked up by news sources who report what he says, all right? They're reporting his words, other people take it, and they take it as gospel, and they start reporting it as truth. And so, simply by saying it out loud, he's put it into specific news circles that then make it truth for him and reflect it back to him. So now he's seeing, hey, remember that thing I said and you guys all told me I was crazy? Well, now look, I'm seeing it on the news right there. Clearly I was right all along. All right. And as a candidate, he could still get away with that. He could still do that and be able to live with himself. Now what's happening is he's finally in a position, finally, where people are fact-checking him, thousands of people are fact-checking him 24 hours a day, and they know enough about him and about the context of his life that they can fact-check him on the spot to his face, and it's pissing him off. And he doesn't know how to deal with it, and that's where he's starting to crumble. This is where now he's in a position where he needs to know things. He needs to be presidential. He needs to understand how the world actually works, and he doesn't. He only knows the reality he's created. And so, hold on a second. Static still there? Nope. All right, I fixed it. So, he's in a position now where he needs to know all of these things. He needs to be able to respond to situations as they arise and actually know facts, actually have research stuff, and not just the executive summaries that, I mean, have you seen the guidelines? That if you're going to bring him intelligence reports, reports of any sort, honestly, three topics to a page. Don't make them too long. Make sure they include lots of charts and pictures, because the president likes charts and pictures. So literally, any topic that he needs to be educated about, the sum total of his education is going to be possibly a half a page that included a chart, and that's what he knows about this topic. Oh my God. This is horrifying. But again, he's in a spot now where he's being fact-checked to his face in real time, and he can't deal with it. So when he stands up there, and he's in a press conference with the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, is right there next to him, and he has to take 5 minutes to talk about how glorious and awesome his presidential victory was. That's seriously? Okay, leaving aside the fact that is the worst context for that, and that this is petty and unpresidential and all that. Let's leave all that aside. All right. But the fact that he then is bragging about this massive win that he had, and brags about it by saying 306 electoral college votes. You know, BB, they said I couldn't even get 220. They said I wouldn't be able to, you need 270 to win. Did you know that? Yeah. They said I couldn't get that. I got 306. That is the largest electoral college win since Reagan. All right, first off, he didn't get 306, he got 304, but okay, you're off by two. I'm fine with that. That's not a gotcha to go playing around with. All right, but the biggest electoral college win since Reagan. And so a reporter gets to fact check him in real time because he's repeating a stupid claim that he's already said before and it's already been fact checked, and he's never been in a position to see any of the fact checking that went on about it. That's the thing. He's made this claim before, and it was fact-checked and proven demonstrably false, absolutely false in all sorts of ways, and that fact-check never got to Trump. All right? He's not seen it, and that's why he's willing to repeat this in this context, because, well, he said it before. He's seen it repeated on the news that he follows, and nobody bothered to set him straight. Nobody. All right? So therefore, he gets fact-checked to his face, and the guy says, well, actually, Obama's win was bigger, and he gives Obama's numbers, because Obama's win was bigger. And Trump, consummate liar that he is, he's already got a cover. The first thing that jumps to his mind, oh, well, I meant Republican win. Oh, well, no, because Bush, right before Obama, Bush was even larger, you know, but that's just what I heard. Look, that's what someone told me. That's the information I was given. Well, you know what? You're the president. You should know better. This is the whole point. As president, he has the entire intelligence apparatus of the United States at his fingertips, and he's already told them that he doesn't believe anything they say. He's pissed them off and said that they're worthless anyway. He signed off, whether it was Steve Bannon that wrote it for him and he just didn't bother to read it, but he signed off on not allowing them into the National Security Council anymore, the intelligence agencies. But he has all that intelligence available to him. Doesn't want it. That's too much trouble. He's not even going to look. He's not bothering to educate himself on stuff, and the cracks are showing, and it's horrifying. And I honestly believe that it's because he's lived his entire life getting his way all the time. And when he doesn't get his way, he will go to Herculean lengths to punish people for frustrating him. I mean, Herculean lengths. Like I say, he will hold a grudge against a comedian talk show host for over 10 years because she said bad things about him on a daytime talk show. Good Lord. This is the kind of grudge he holds. And I think he honestly is just so used to making up the facts. So used to just picking out what makes sense to him, and that's what he's going to say, even if it's half delusion, all right, even if it's pulled from unbelievably unreliable resources, even if he has the truth at his fingertips. He has people who are paid to come tell him what the truth of the world is, and he doesn't want to hear them. He doesn't want to listen to them. People keep talking about this being some sort of plan on Trump's part, that this is all organized because there's no way he could possibly be this ignorant of the facts. I think he really is. I think he's truly that ignorant because nobody tells him. I mean, honestly, this whole bit at the press conference with his Electoral College win and how he's bragging about his massive Electoral College win. And then when he's confronted to his face, fact-checked in real time, confronted to his face, he deflates. It's not that he stands up and maintains the facts, because if this was all a plan, if this was all some kind of organized plot to destroy truth and information, then he would have stood up and said, no, that's not true. In fact, here's what happened. And he would just make up some facts that he's got at the ready, and he would stalwartly defend his stupid position. But instead, he doesn't. He deflates. He backs off. He's offering excuses for, oh, well, what I meant was, oh, well, you know, hey, look, that's just what people told me. That's not a guy with a plan. That's a guy who honestly believed that his Electoral College win was the largest since Reagan's. He honestly believed in a lie that it literally would have taken anybody 30 seconds to go, Electoral College counts last X number of elections. One Google phrase, you could have had all of them in a nice convenient chart, probably off of Wikipedia. The numbers would have been right there in front of you, easily verifiable. All right. And he could have known that, but he didn't. He believed a lie, because a lie he had told before. And he believed that lie still, because when he told it last time and the whole world fact-checked him, he didn't see it. Nobody showed that to him. Nobody said, oh, by the way, Mr. Trump, all that stuff you were saying about your Electoral College win, just for the record, here's what's actually true, and here's what all the news outlets are saying about it, and here's what we need to, you know, maybe next time you might want to back off of that. Nobody told him. You know why? Because if you tell him he's wrong, especially if you're going to disrespect his glorious presidential win, you wouldn't have a job anymore. So nobody brings it to him and nobody tells him. Wow. All right, now, the fact that I think he's really, really unqualified for this job, the fact that I think that he is absolutely by far the most unqualified person to ever hold the office of president. Absolutely. I think he is incapable of doing this job to even a minimal level of competence. All right. I think all of that's true. On top of that, I think he's headed for some sort of implosion or collapse here. But I don't know if that's good or bad, or I have no idea. That doesn't mean there's not organized, intelligent danger somewhere behind the scenes on all of this. There absolutely is. All right. And there are people who are using Trump and using his incompetence to their own advantage. Steve Bannon, absolutely. All right. There are people behind the scenes who are pushing their agenda, making themselves heard because they know that he reacts to, you know, the last person to give him a convincing argument, the last thing that he saw on the news shows, the last thing that he saw on Twitter, and he'll react to those things. And there are people who are using that to their advantage. Certainly, the House and Senate Republicans are using this to their advantage. There's no way they don't see a president heading for an implosion here. All right. There's no way. Now, some of them don't. Some of them truly believe that he really is this new genius outsider who's going to make all the changes. Okay. Some of them believe in all that, but most of them have to know that he is not a president. He's not qualified for this. And yet they're going to keep propping him up and they're going to keep supporting him because until he does finally collapse, they have the ability to get through all the crap they ever wanted. All right. All that secret stuff, all that dirty Republican stuff. And I shouldn't phrase it like that because for a lot of it, when they're talking about lowering taxes on big business, when they're talking about getting rid of banking industry regulations, when they're talking about, doing away with most of the EPA and limiting us to, you know what part of the problem is? Part of the problem is we've got too many endangered species. Look, if you want to protect endangered species, we're going to limit it to 250. You pick the 250 that are most important to you, and then the rest of them can go hang. This is, all right, when they're talking about these kinds of things, they genuinely believe, some of them, genuinely believe that getting out of the way of big business is the best way to spur economic growth in this country, and raw economic growth is the cure for all of our ills. And they truly believe that look, a rising tide raises all boats, that if we can just get out of the way of big business and let them do what they want, suddenly this nation will be unbelievably prosperous again, and we'll be making money hand over fist, and that benefits everybody because, well, trickle down, right? So I shouldn't say evil. I shouldn't say that I shouldn't refer to it, categorize it as dirty, but let's also note that they're doing it in secret. Let's note that while Trump is dominating the news cycle, the Congress and Senate are busy as hell behind the scenes, rolling back as much Obama era stuff as they can to get past as much stuff as they can get done before they get caught out, before it's finally time to come answer for it. Because there's a lot of things that they think are in the best interest of the nation, or maybe in the best interest of their particular constituents or their particular supporters. And they think that it's best, but they also recognize the optics of it and go, look, if we had to do this by the light of day and had to spell out exactly what we're changing and getting rid of, boy, it's hard to explain the intricacies of this. And yeah, it looks really bad when you say it like that. But, you know, if you understood how finance and economy and big business really worked, you'd see why this is so important. So they're doing it under cover of darkness. They're doing it under cover of Trump, and they're letting him bumble his way through all this. All right. Whoa. I got way far afield. I didn't expect to talk about any of this. You know what? I'm done with my uncomfortable topics for this week. I'm sure we're going to keep coming back to this. But man, that was way too much talk. I don't want to turn this into a political podcast, but people have to see, even those of you who support Trump, you voted for him, you truly believe his ideas are great ones. You do see that he's not draining the swamp, you see that he's brought in almost all of his cabinet level, high level positions, almost all of them are rich white men who are huge in finance, huge in these big corporations that have, you see that he's not draining the swamp. He's just bringing in, well, in some cases, he's not draining the swamp, and in some cases, he's draining it just to refill it with a different swamp. It's still, it's rule by big business, and it's scary. You see that he really doesn't have a mastery of the facts, right? You understand that he really doesn't know what he's, I mean, the idea that, he didn't seem to know who Frederick Douglass was. He doesn't know, anything about nuclear politics. And he made that very clear by being unable to answer very simple questions. He made it very clear that he has no idea what one state and two state solutions in the Middle East mean for Israel and Palestine. He has no idea what that means and no idea even which side was in favor of which solution. So he just stumbled through it like a ninth grader faking his way through a book report that he didn't bother to read the book for. I mean, it was clearly he was just making stuff up as he went along. Even if you supported him, you have to see that. You have to understand that he really doesn't know what's happening. Oh, man. All right. I just said I was done. I'm done. All right. We're off of this. You know what? You know what would make me feel better? The Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and R2 rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdpriradio.com/nerds. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And hello?
You couldn't get rid of me if you tried.
He's back. Okay. First off, before we get to the first Pod-O-Matic here, here, why don't you pull up a chair? You can join me.
But chairs are loud, and I will go back to Skyrim after this.
But if you just stand there with your face pressed up against mine, our beards will lock like Velcro, and then we'll be stuck together.
That's hot.
Yeah, no, that's...
I could do this all day.
Although, what is that minty fresh breath you have? That is really... Is that peppermint?
Yeah, that's Mentos.
Oh, man, that is lovely.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah, I was really expecting this to be unpleasant, but now, this is great. No, I'm sorry, you got to stop. Get a chair, damn it. Just pull up a chair. I can't record like that. I was going to let you guys know, I sent out a call this week to say, hey, send me some Pod-O-Matics. And holy crap, if you guys didn't respond like gangbusters. You guys are awesome. I received 10 here, 20 there, 10 here. I mean, it was my brother sent 40. I got so many Pod-O-Matics. We're up to like 250 now in the bin. This is spectacular. Which is, look, for those of you who didn't send in any, okay, I guess. I mean, if that's your level of investment in this podcast, I suppose. I mean, you know, I do put out, a podcast, 48 out of 52 weeks a year, and I put a lot of effort into these things, and I mean, you know, look, you don't have to do anything, all right? If you just want to listen and enjoy, you know what? I'm here for you. That's what this is all about.
And this is a long time before we get to the first Pod-O-Matic.
But, you know, I mean, if you had some questions, if you had some time, I mean, it wouldn't hurt, right?
This is exactly what your viewers want to hear.
Well, I am not public radio, the other NPR, the lesser NPR, but man, they are really good with the guilt. Twice a year, man. They guilt you into giving them money. I didn't actually ever give them any money, but man, they made me want to. Boy, they really laid on the
NPR
guilt.
NPR was ASMR before ASMR was a thing. Hey guys, we're gonna tell you about the news.
Yeah. So, anyway, but if you guys, joking guilt aside, honestly, for those of you who haven't sent me any, if you want to send me some Pod-O-Matics, you should feel free to do that. I had done some math, and now everyone sent me so many Pod-O-Matics that the math is completely thrown off now. But honestly, here, let me roll over to where the math is located right this moment. I have, for example, if you send me 20 Pod-O-Matics right now, 20, low price, all right? For example, as Stan did, because Stan has exactly 20 as I'm looking at the list. That means that Stan today There's a 58% chance that one of Stan's is going to come up in today's show. If you send me just 10, you still got like a 35% chance of having yours come up this episode. And certainly an almost 90% chance over the course of a month. I mean, seriously, you don't have to send that many, and you'll hear them reflected back to you, well, you know, within a few episodes. So now normally, again, I had done the math when I first started asking for Podomatics. I didn't done the same math then when I only had like 120. And I was going to say, look, send me 5 Podomatics. There's still a good 50% chance. And now you guys have doubled my Podomatics. So you guys have been very generous. But anyone else, if you haven't sent any in a long time, or if you've never sent any and you feel like being a part of this, come join us. Because, oh, man, this is really cool. All right. You know what? Aiden's right. This is not what we're going to listen to. This is not actually very entertaining at all. So instead, we'll go to the entertaining part, number 57. And number 57, wow, during all that stalling, you would think, could I have rolled down to actually check the number? I could have. I didn't. It's from Daz. And Daz says, are insects really nutritious? If so, why hasn't the food industry cornered the market yet?
I have an answer for both of those, actually.
Okay.
Insects are extremely high in protein, and most of them, if ingested, will not harm you. And yes, they are actually pretty healthy for your body. But the reason we don't put it in food is because, dude, that's gross.
Yeah, ultimately, I think that's about right. I mean, it would be like, look, what if we found out that that baby puppies were really, really nutritious? You're not getting people to put baby puppies in there.
When, in fact, baby puppies are actually very nutritious, actually.
Yeah, they really are. Seriously, if you want healthy, perfect skin, eat puppies. All right. But I think that's... I think that's really the bottom line, is that yes, insects really are nutritious, and nobody has capitalized on that, because I don't know what the logistics of setting up a program to, you know, I don't know, what are you gonna breed that's effective? I mean, you're gonna be raising what? Mealworms, crickets, ants.
Grasshoppers are very, very, very high in protein.
Right. So you're gonna raise whatever they are. Breed them en masse, which wouldn't be tough, but breed them en masse, and then the process for
locust
for grinding them up and using them as filler in whatever. I mean, look, you saw how well, you know, soybean and tofu and other protein substitutes went over.
Kale.
Yeah. So if you're looking at bugs, oh man, how easy is it for the beef industry to discredit your grasshopper burger,
try our new butterfly-filled Twinkies.
I mean, seriously, it's not that tough to come up with an image that is going to turn someone's stomach away from insect-based food additives. So, which is too bad, because seriously, I presume easy to raise, cheap, nutritious. I mean, I don't know the numbers on them. But for all I know, maybe it's actually really super, super expensive and, you know, does horrible things to the environment when you start raising that number of insects, but I doubt it.
I mean, look. If I can just grow mealworms in my kitchen, I'm pretty sure a business can do it. I mean, honestly.
you can grow, are you growing mealworms in my kitchen?
Well, I mean, hypothetically, right?
Okay. So that was Daz. He says, or have they, and we just haven't realized that that's what they're doing yet. No, I'm pretty sure they haven't, because...
Yes, they are them government's reptiles!
51. Wake up, sheeple. 51 comes from... Eliahad! Eliahad actually did respond to guilt, and that's the only reason he submitted this question. Eliahad says, do you have a brother from another mother? Does that make you a step-bro?
Does it?
Does...
I mean, yes, but no?
I do not have a bro... Well...
Yeah?
Yeah, look, my cousin Rob, when we grew up, he grew up living in our home like a brother to me.
Oh, I mean, like...
But... Even more than that, I have friends that, yeah, I'm very, very close to, and if you wanted to use that that hackneyed phraseology to describe our relationship, I'm sure we could do that.
I mean, in all technicality, I mean, biologically, I mean, you do have a brother that was not technically from your own mother.
Oh, that's true. God, I you know what? I never would have even have, as you're questioning this, would never have thought that my brother Daniel, who is adopted, he was born in Korea, we adopted him when he was 10 months old, never even occurred to me, what do you mean not my brother from another, he's my brother. He's always been my brother. We have the same parents. Of course he's my brother. Oh, I see what you're saying. Biologically, I get it. Wow. That didn't even ring for me. And no, that would still make him, even in that case, that would make him my brother, not my stepbro. Is your stepbro reference? Is that from Step Brothers?
No.
Is that a?
No.
Okay.
That, I have no idea. This is a common phrase.
You sure?
I need to get on mic better.
95. 95 is? It's from Master. Hey, Master. Master says, how is President Trump's first year going? Well, I don't know about his first year because I've now stumbled across this question only after the first month of his presidency. So 1 month into his first year, he is not doing well. He is not holding up well. He is not a happy man. He is not competent at his job. He is not. I mean, look, if you voted for him for certain things that he said he was accomplishing, but then by God, he has done his damnedest to check off that list of campaign promises. And I mean, if you wanted him to keep the Muslims out of this country, well, he's working as hard as he can to keep them out. I mean, he's being blocked, but man, he's working on it. You wanted him to build that wall? All right. He's already signed the order. He's ready to build that wall.
I feel like Trump and America are analogous to telling a mentally handicapped child to throw a fish back, and he just grabs the fish and stares at you blankly while the fish suffocates.
Oh. He didn't have to say mentally handicapped. He could just be a toddler. I mean, it could be like handing a toddler a moth and saying, oh, look how pretty it is. And it's, yeah, and as it sits in the hand, the kid just squish. Cause
like the caterpillars in the backyard.
Right. It would be, but you don't have to be mentally handicapped to do that. You've got toddlers that do stupid crap like that all the time. That would be nice and easy.
I just wanted to insult Trump.
Yeah, no, Trump is not doing well. And, Master, I'm guessing that you wrote this question long before the election. So this was, since you knew I was anti-Trump back then, this was your dig, at saying that he was going to win. And I don't get the question until now that it's a done deal. So, all right, you got me there. You won. All right. I hope you're happy with how it's going because, you know, you're the one that asked for it. So we'll see. We'll see. Ultimately, this is going to pan out in ways far different than anyone is expecting, and our country is going to be very different in a lot of ways when it's all over. And I hope it's all for the better. So we'll find out. Number 15. 15 comes from. There it is. It's from Zimny. Oh, nice to have you back, Zim.
We got a lot of variety going on this time around.
I know, because I got, I mean, it was Zimny and Eliahad and Kaz and Stan and my brother and, oh, there's one more of you and I've forgotten who it was and I'm so sorry. Man, there was a lot of them that came in. So anyway, Zimny says, which type of sci-fi do you feel has been overlooked the most in recent years? You got an answer on this one, man? That is a tough question.
I mean, with Life coming out, I want to say horror, but then again, Life is coming out.
Yeah?
I mean, in recent years, since Alien, space horror hasn't really been explored much.
And I'm sure there will be somebody who posts up 10 examples to show that you're wrong, but I'm not thinking of sci-fi horror right off. Although, damn it, what was that? Ugh.
You could give me a plot summary and I could tell you.
Oh, it's the one on the spaceship.
Great, thanks.
Stop. Stop. They're
Prometheus.
No. No, they're on an ark ship, and they wake up early before they get there.
That's not horror.
No, it's not.
It's Passengers.
It's not Passengers. This was about 10 years ago, and they wake up early, and they find that there are monsters roaming the ship.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, they're extra-evolved humans.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That's one of my favorites.
But that's not reason. That's 10 years ago.
That's true. Okay, I guess I just made the point. All right, sci-fi horror, that's a good one. I would have
sci-fi romance. Nope, damn, Passengers. Never mind.
Well, I was going to say Passengers, or what's that stupid...
Oh, friggin' The Fault in Our Actual Stars?
Yes, yeah, the stupid teenage Martian kid.
The name of the movie is The Space Between Us, by the way.
Gross. We've got Star Wars back, so our space opera quota is being filled, but, you know, I was kind of missing, really epic space opera. The idea of doing a real science fantasy kind of, you know, we don't have to worry so much about the hard science and explaining how everything works. We can just have a cool sci-fi setting and just have fun in it.
You don't hear what the new Star Wars series needs?
But again, there's Star Wars in now, so we're getting some of that.
The new Star Wars needs more Gungans. Like, honestly, more Gungans.
To die?
No, just... Because there were... Honestly, Jar Jar, best character.
Oh, that's right. And, what's your favorite Batman film?
The Adam West one?
No, you're supposed to say Batman and Robin. All right. Anyway.
I have some dignity.
I don't believe you. 26. 26 is... There it is. It's from Master again. Look at this guy go. Master says, do you have a daughter that I haven't heard about? Nope. If not...
Dad, I have a confession.
No. Not yet. If not, do you wish you did have a daughter, or are you happy not to have one? Look, I am happy with whatever kids I've been given, and honestly, I think having a daughter would have been cool, but also, I love my four sons a lot, and I don't feel like I'm missing that experience. Having a daughter would have been awesome, but not having a daughter, also awesome.
Can I direct the attention to the first part of this question real quick? What kind of dick would you be if you had a daughter and just never mentioned her?
Five years on this podcast, I talk about my four boys constantly. But Tiffany gets no love at all. That is so sad.
Sort of like Trump's daughter, Tiffany?
That's right. That's how Trump operates. All his other kids, you hear about them all the time. Tiffany, yeah, we gotta sweep her under the rug. 64. And 64.
64, the best version of Nintendo.
Who do you think it's going to be from?
Master.
Oh, you're wrong. Oh, it's from Ronster.
I was close, but I was off by a few letters.
Ronster says, tell us, please, what one thing you could do to... Wait, did I say Ronster earlier? Because Ron sent me some more this week. Ron's in that mix. All right, anyway, maybe he's the one I forgot. Maybe not. Tell us, please, what one thing you could do to improve Pathfinder...
Ninjas.
They have ninjas.
Damn it.
I know.
Robots.
I've seen the robot supplements. They don't come from Paizo directly, but I've seen the robot supplements and I'm not thrilled about them, but there's automatons of different sorts.
No. Actual answer. A way to play more easily as the humanoid monsters.
Oh. I don't have much problem with that.
Like, if I wanted to play a Thorn Man, if I wanted to.
No, they got rules for them. We just don't break them out, but...
I want to play a Thorn Man at some point.
Then, you know what?
A really huggy Thorn Man.
Oh, dude, Yeah, it's just that I discourage that sort of thing.
That's why...
Because there's... When I'm playing Pathfinder with you guys, when I'm running a game... I like having a group that can go into town and hang out, and we don't either have to use convoluted disguises or some kind of weird justification or rewriting of of most of the basic rules of these societies that are already created for me.
I'll wear a really thick sweater.
So it's a lot easier on me if I have more normal as you get, you know, when you're
a goblin. And
right, wizards. No, see, the goblin was problematic. I mean, I like your goblin. I love your goblin.
I mean, I was still chaotic evil.
Right. Love your goblin, but it makes it difficult to go into town. You have a hat of disguise so you can pose as a halfling whenever you need to.
What about my dark elf coming up?
Right. See, exactly my problem.
What about the lizard man I always played as before this?
You see my problem. You love playing bizarre humanoids.
Yeah.
And it really... it makes some of the social aspects of these games really difficult to run. So, look,
I will be wearing a mask, though.
As for me, if I was going to make Pathfinder better, man, I don't know. I'm so deep in Pathfinder. I'm really, I'm just kind of all on board. I haven't thought for very long about things that I would want from Pathfinder, because, I mean, I could say, look, do I want more classes and options? Do I want more monsters? Do I want more? Look, I love seeing all of those things.
A whole butt ton of classes.
Right, but they keep producing those, and they're going to keep producing those. And sometimes it's too much. And you know what? Yeah, it's really cool that I'm seeing these new options, but even without them, I have more than enough material to run decades worth of games. So really hard to say. I'm sorry that this is a crappy answer, but it's a crappy answer. 66. Also from Ronster. And Ron says, which Shakespeare character is most like you?
Shakespeare, from Shakespeare in Love.
Macbeth? I'm trying to think of the plays that I really liked when I read them. That's why I say Macbeth right away.
Oh, I know my answer.
What's yours?
Hamlet, because my father's dead to me.
Oh, very nice. But wrong. And also, you want to kill your uncle.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because he murdered...
God, fuck Andy.
Yeah. No, I was going to say Kyle, but all right. I don't know. I like... I've always liked Macbeth. I like the idea of...
everyone dying at the end?
Well, that's a lot of his plays. No. I like the character of Macbeth. Not so much the domineering, ambitious wife. Not so much the murdering and the... but the idea that Macbeth was really kind of just happy to be who he was going to be. But then he was kind of a pushover. I mean, once this ambition thing comes around... okay, that one doesn't work for me. My favorite character... from all of Shakespeare is Malvolio. But
just for the name?
No, because Malvolio was a pompous fool. He was the semi-villain from Twelfth Night, and he was just this pompous ass, and he was terrible. But he was also easily fooled, and I'm not saying I'm anything like him necessarily. I'm just saying I've always liked this character. And again, as I've bragged about probably 38 times on this podcast already, I never did read Twelfth Night when I was in college, but I got an A+ on that paper because I wrote a paper about Malvolio, and I got an A+ on that paper without ever having read the play.
Real quick.
I love the character.
In Hamlet, Olivia's brother.
What?
In the play Hamlet, Olivia's brother.
Ophelia?
Ophelia, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, that guy. I like him. He's very noble.
I don't remember him.
Laertes, I want to say.
Laertes? Maybe.
Yeah. It's Laertes.
Okay.
Because he died by fencing. That's how I remember it.
Oh, all right. If I had to pick, I'm going to go with Benedict from, what's the name of that one?
Doctor Strange?
Benedict and Beatrice from, no. Damn it.
Took you a second.
Oh, Jesus. I'm not going to come up with the name. It was the one that they did the... Stop. Joss Whedon and his friends did a...
Much Ado About Nothing.
Thank you. Much Ado. God.
You are really not good at movie titles today.
I was just drawing a blank on that. Anyway, I like Benedict a lot. I have always related to him as, again, he's kind of sarcastic and witty, and I like the lovesick nature of him, the attraction to Beatrice while not wanting to admit it, and I always found that really cool. So, again, you know, now I'm an old married guy with lots of kids, so I suppose I would have to pick someone very different, but I don't want to. I'm going to stick with Benedict as my choice. 67. See, man, we're just not moving anywhere, are we? All right. 67 is from...
some douche.
It's from Kyle. Kyle says, quick, recite the Jabberwock. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
'Twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frummiest Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand, long time the manxome foe he sought. Then rested he by a tum-tum tree, and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood, and burbled as it came. 1-2, 1-2, and through his vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he came galumphing back. And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, Callooh-Callay, he chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. That wasn't bad. You were pretty on there.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm assuming that if I hadn't been reciting it, you could have done it just slower.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. I didn't know you knew it. So, alright.
I'm one of your sons. At a certain age, we all know it.
So true.
Eli's getting there.
Number one.
I mean, Jacob did that for poetry.
Alright. Number one is from Kyle. Kyle says, quick, create a limerick about Talvin.
Okay.
There once was a man named Talvin, whose dick was so... no, that's completely different. I got nothing. Give me a limerick.
I don't know Talvin.
You don't have to know Talvin. You just have to come up with something that rhymes with Talvin. There's nothing that rhymes with Talvin. What is wrong with you? You write a limerick about Talvin, jerk. 89. Yeah, are you proud of yourself? 89. It's from Mrs. Darks. This may be our last one. Mrs. Darks says, stealing from Talking Dead, during the zombie apocalypse, would you rather be on a ship and take to the water or stay on dry land?
Ship. Zombies can't swim.
No, that's true.
The best they can do is create an underwater tower.
Yeah. If I were in a zombie apocalypse, I believe that...
we'd go to Grandma and Grandpa's house and eat all their canned food?
Well, yeah, that's obviously where we'd go. We don't have access to a large enough body of water to make a ship worthwhile.
We're landlocked.
But if we had a fairly seaworthy ship with... no, here's the problem with a ship. It depends on where you're at, because you're going to run out of fuel. All right? Because, again, every...
not if it's a Viking rowing ship!
Every version of the apocalypse seems to forget that gasoline goes bad. It is a volatile liquid, and after the first year, you're going to find a lot of the gas that you pull up has been exposed to air or has just been sitting there too long. You're going to find, after a year, a lot of the gas you find doesn't work. After 2 years, the gas don't work. You can't, like Walking Dead is doing now, they are 2 years into the apocalypse, and they are still walking into places and checking to see if cars will start. And, oh my God, we've got one that starts up. Let's drive. It's been sitting for 2 years. The gas is bad. It's been sitting for 2 years. There's other problems inside that engine. It's been sitting for 2 years. The tires are going to shred the minute you try and pull away because the tires have been sitting there for too long. It's been exposed to the weather all this time, not running, not being maintained. You just don't get to drive away. So, if you've got a boat that doesn't depend on gasoline,
Maybe. Like my Viking rowing ship.
Right. A Viking longship would be perfect.
Go pillage some
zombies. It would be nice to be able to, you know, like if you could run up and down the coast. But again, wherever you sit, now see, if you're on the sea though, eventually there's going to be storms. Eventually something is going to cause you problems and you're going to have to go aground. I mean, obviously you have to go aground no matter what, but, yeah, I just can't trust the ship. There's lots of things that are about it that are good. It would be nice to have a boat as an option for an escape. But, I mean, God, how nice would it be to have an actual coastal city where you can set up your, you know, at least have your back to the sea so you've got, one extra line of defense. And then you also have boats out there that you can make an escape on if everything gets overrun. There's actually plans for this. But I wouldn't want to be at sea. I mean, you're going to have to pull in regularly to restock. You're going to have to keep finding food and do your scavenging, and you're not going to be able to do that from the ocean. Well, except you can fish while you're on the ocean, but you can't live on just fish. You still got to come in.
Why can't you just live off fish and rainwater?
Because, well, look, you can create some condensers and stills, and you can get, you know, you can actually get fresh water while you're out there. You could set up a system for it. But you couldn't live off of fish because you would then die of scurvy.
Fish and lemons. Make some lemon trees.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, there's just too many complicated things that would happen out at sea. I would rather be on land.
We anchor ourselves right outside the Sprite factory.
Yeah, I haven't. Well, no, actually. Oh, yeah, Sprite would be. Okay, no, if we were off of Atlanta, there's the Coca-Cola factory there, and they make Sprite.
Yeah.
See? Perfect. All right. Then
scurvy solved.
I guess we're okay then with the magic of Lyman. So that's the end of the Podomatic. I am going to, while I silence this guy, I am going to turn this over to GLaDOS, and she will give us a recap of the episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage, and that's it. All of the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks versus Casting the Curious no longer exists. I gotta take that out of here. Me Like Trivia, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends. If you enjoy it, spread the word, let other people enjoy it, or send me Podomatics, or remember, here, let me get right to this one. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so don't forget to send me questions or topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal, and if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, as Ronster and Talvin both did for this week's 174, send it to me and save me all that grueling research. If you send it to me, I will use it, and most of the time, remember to give you credit. Look, I also, every week, after I do my intro, I give you either a co-host or a sponsor or what Nerd Pride Radio smells like. If you've got ideas for any of those that you think are funny or appropriate to anything I've ever talked about or just entertain you, send them over to me. I will probably use those as well. Again, lazy. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio, but to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up. Send me a message. We will hang out together and become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start every podcast, I go out to the internet on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds and on my Facebook page, and I tell people, hey, I'm recording. If you want to participate, post up now. I will read it off at the end of the cast. So that's what I'm doing. Let's read it off. All right. Starting at Facebook, I've got, three replies and then some sub replies. I've had this open all night long. I got three. That's pretty, don't laugh. All right. First is from Nelly. And Nelly says, interesting. So I'm not sure what mini I should paint next. Help me pick male or female. What class? What colors should I use? All right. Now hold on. There's a reply here already. The reply is, it's from Sarah Beth. Sarah Beth says, a female rebel. Give her a pink helm. Okay. I say a male rebel. Give him a pink helm. God, why you gotta be so sexist about it, Sarah Beth? Jeez. In all honesty, man, you're leaving this wide open. I would, personally, I say go female, and, I don't know how often you do sneaky characters, because look, I like vibrant characters. I like things with lots of color in it, vibrant. But, you know, what if you did a sneaky one? What if you did someone who was, you know, a rogue, a ninja, a ranger who's supposed to be blending into the woods, and do it in, blacks and browns and dark shades of gray. Can you do that and still bring life to it and still make them cool? Are there highlights that can go in there, parts of the scenery that go in there that make them stand out anyway in spite of the muted colors? Like I say, I'm a huge fan of bright colors, but that's why I'm suggesting maybe go against type a little bit. But again, I don't know. I've seen a lot of your minis, but I'm having a tough time just classifying them mentally. Do you do a lot of dark? Do you do a lot of sneaky? Do you do a lot of, I don't know. So that's my thought. Or, you know, go with Sarah Beth's advice. Female rebel. Pink. There you go. Next up is Kaz. And Kaz says, there are only two soda flavors left in the world. Do you subsist on Strawberry Fanta or Diet Rite? Diet Rite. I'm gonna go
water for the rest of my life.
Yeah. My son says he's drinking water for the rest of his life. Look, you can either get on the mic or you can shut the hell up. What is so tough about this? Why do I have to be the voice of Kyle here? You're making me the bad guy.
Maybe I'm doing it to annoy Kyle.
Which implies that Kyle is the bad guy, and by being the voice of Kyle, I am now, transitively, the bad guy.
Maybe I'm trying to just annoy Kyle right now.
Anyway, look, if the only choices you're going to give me are Strawberry Fanta or Diet Rite, I'm going to go Diet Rite because I can handle Diet Rite. I can't handle sweet sodas for that long. Although you're saying I'm going to subsist on them. Is this my only nutrition? When you say there are only two soda flavors left in the world, do you mean that's the only food there is? Then clearly I need Strawberry Fanta. And it's not, I know it's not Lyman, but maybe Strawberry fends off scurvy. God, I'm hoping at this point. Man, this is a bad situation. I am not going to be in good shape after a month of this. All right. And then Sarah Beth posts. Sarah Beth says, tell me your favorite thing about today. Today? Well, my favorite thing about today is recording this podcast, to tell the truth. Because, like I said, we had an exciting weekend. We went out with the scouts and we went, tubing in the snow when it was 60 degrees out because this place makes its own snow. And, we had a blast. It was really, really awesome. And we went to the Butterfly House and Aquarium up there and we did lots of fun things as a family and it was cool. And now today, look, I slept in late. I was really grumpy. We went and got my kid's car fixed and, now I'm in a good mood. Now I've finally woke up enough and I'm doing my recording and I feel really good. And so this has been the best part of the day so far. Although later, look, my family's going to get home. We're having steak for supper. That's going to be pretty awesome. But you know, for right now, this is my favorite thing about today. So, all right. Unless you want me to tell you my favorite thing about President's Day, but that doesn't sound exciting at all. So, all right, that's enough for Facebook. Now I go over to Nerd Pride Radio at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And I have, four replies on my listener betrayal. All right, let's get on in there and see what they've got to say. Hold on. I have to put an end to this one and say, done. And now we're done. All right, so the first one comes from, I believe it's from Kaz. he says as he stalls while waiting for the page to load. There it is. It is from Kaz. Kaz says, an episode or two, you talked about not being able to find your favorite soda. Yes, the same thing is happening for me in Wisconsin. There's some kind of a conspiracy keeping me from my Kickstart Limeade. I need you to tell your listeners why your children are to blame. Look, here's the problem, is my children were part of the huge demand for Crystal Pepsi, right?
Still are.
And thus, because is Kickstart for Mountain Dew?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It's a Mountain Dew energy
drink. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, then I'm right on. So, in order to fulfill this demand for Crystal Pepsi, which, by the way, is going to die out, and they're going to realize that there's not enough people who drink Crystal Pepsi, despite what the internet was telling them, it's just going to die, and they're going to have wasted their money again, because nobody likes Crystal Pepsi. But because of this crazy petition and all these people demanding it, they had to divert resources to make Crystal Pepsi, and the only place they could think to take it from was Mountain Dew Kickstart Limeade. Yeah. Sorry, dude. So, I mean, my kids aren't solely responsible, but, man, they certainly contributed. I'm sorry that had to happen to you. I feel bad now. Kaz continues. MDG Sector. We want to hear about it. Okay, MDG Sector is the name of the paranoia game we're in right now. They are starting from MDG Sector. And part of figuring out what the plot of this game is figuring out what MDG stands for. And I ain't telling you. So, MDG Sector is a game, and there are 6 troubleshooters, and they are in an unusual situation, and people may die. I think that's everything I can legitimately tell you at this point. In fact, I think I can tell you that one person has already died. I think I've said too much. I'm just going to have to let that go. So, his next question. What's your most recent gaming or nerdy purchase? Technically, my last gaming purchase is a game that I am going to get for my birthday. My wife said, hey, have you seen this before? It's got all sorts of awards on it, and it looks really cool. And I looked at it. I can't even remember what the name of the game was now. I looked at it. It had great reviews. It came in a tin, which, ooh, that's always a bonus that it comes in a tin. And, yeah, it's got cards, and it's got dice, and it really good artwork. And so whatever it was, like, God, I wish I could remember the name of it now. I said, wow, yeah, that does look really cool. Oh, my God, it's on sale for $9? Yeah, we definitely need that. And she said, okay, go ahead and order it. And so I clicked order because it was just on Amazon. She said, there, that's for your birthday. Damn it. So I ordered it. It's been delivered. I won't get it for another month, and I can't remember what it's called. Darn it. I mean, I could go look it up, or I could find where she's hidden the box and just pull it out, but that would be disingenuous. I'm not going to do that. All right. Last, when are you going to get Battletoads in stock? Yeah, look, we're not currently carrying Battletoads because, look, until I can finish Ghosts and Goblins, I don't have time for anything else. So I can't even pay attention to that yet. Let me finish this one out, and then I'll see what this whole Battletoad thing is. How's that work for you? Next up, Ronster. Ronster says, lucky me, it's a regular work day, but that just means more time to betray you. Please tell us about a vacation story involving Kyle and some mischief you got into. Makeup stuff if needed. Okay, there was the time we went to Montreal as a family, and those Montreal pictures are horrifying because it was, very early 1980s, so we still had hairstyles and clothing styles that looks like they were left over from the 70s. It was that transition period. They are grossly embarrassing. I mean, running around in gym shorts and stupid-looking t-shirts, and we've got the tube socks, the white tube socks with the colored stripes on them, pulled all the way up to our knees, and hair is just, oh god. Anyway, so that was the most horrifying part of that, was the clothing and the style. But having said that, while we were in Montreal, we didn't really get up to any mischief. I think the worst thing we did was we couldn't figure out how the subway worked, and so we just kind of kept going on and riding it, and even though it was clear that there was some place that you were supposed to pay for it, there was nobody down there. I mean, there was nobody on the trains that day. We were there on a weekend or a holiday or something, I don't know. But there was no one down there, no one around, there was no people working, no one checking anything, so we just kind of rode the subway for free all day. There, that's as much mischief as we got into on that vacation. And then we stabbed a guy. There. You said I should make stuff up if I need to. Kyle has lots of great stories about the mischief he was up to in Japan, because, you know, he was in high school, and there's lots of great mischief stories about being in high school. I only think of it because I only went to Japan on vacation, because I didn't actually live there like they did. And so for me, anything that happened there was on vacation. But again, mischief, not so much. I mean, look, we went out to the clubs for New Year's Eve. We, we rode the trains. We went shopping in town. We went, but mischief. Now, he has lots of mischief stories. Because apparently if you're white in Japan, they don't really card you when you go to buy alcohol. So, you know, he and his friends are 17 years old, and even though the drinking age, I think, was 19 at the time, nobody carded them, nobody asked any questions. You just go in, buy what you want, and you go. And I do know that there was some, boy, I hope the statute of limitations on fire extinguisher fights is up already, because he did tell me a story about them going to a public park in Japan with fire extinguishers and having a fire extinguisher battle. I don't know where they got the extinguishers from. I assume stolen, but who knows. But man, I don't, well, someone have to remind me, Kyle, Rob, Daniel, one of you, if you've got some stories of mischief we got up to on vacation, let me know. Cause I don't have anything good yet. Oh man. I'm sorry, Ron. I feel like I'm letting you down. Oh, but hey, speaking of the devil, here's Kyle. Kyle says, so, hey, who's got the most Podomatic questions? I'm paraphrasing. And let me tell you, before today's show started, the most Podomatic questions came from, oh, hey, would you look at that? It's my brother Kyle. My brother Kyle has 58. Ronster, 49. Kaz rocking third with 30 of them. Zimney's at 29. Mrs. Dark's 21. Stan at 20. Aliyah had 12. Everyone below that is in single digits. And I've got Master D-Rod, Daz, Billy Bob, Aaron, Irish Fan, Humongous, all still on the charts. So, there you go. But yeah, it's Kyle. You feel good about that, man? Cause, dude, I read some of the questions before I pasted them in, and you put some effort into this. I am very, very impressed. So thank you. Alright. Next up, it's Kyle. Kyle says, a topical football-themed riddle for Mike, but everyone else, feel free to answer it. Why is it a criminal offense for a man living in Boston to be buried in Atlanta?
Because he's living in Boston!
Because he's still living. There you go. And then that's it. It says done. Did I miss one in there? No, that was four. Kaz, Ron, Kyle. All right. We're all finished. Oh, this was longer than has been typical lately. So I guess that's good. Anyway, you guys have been awesome. Thanks for showing up. I enjoyed this, and I can feel my voice going, so hopefully I'm not getting sick, because I got things to do this week, but we'll find out. So take care. I love you. We'll see you next week. Say goodnight, Aiden.
Goodnight, Aiden.
Say goodnight, R2.